Welcome to the November 9th, 2019, 2 UTC session of TeamSpeak for OpenHBSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been exploring some different, reviewing different processes for how things are done, which is often not the most interesting thing. So it's getting ready for some programming, and I'm trying to put some pieces together, but it'll take a bit. So I'm working on that. And next on the list, I have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.openhbsdr.org. And then we have Phil, VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, Dave. Sorry about that. Just wading through some emails. Unfortunately, nothing to report again. Very, very hectic week. And also apologies to people who have been emailing me during the week. I've got some visitors on coming down from Korea to work with me next week. So been up to my eyes with work. So unfortunately, a lot of emails replied. There's a few people emailing me about Pure Signal, which I'll try and get around to over the weekend, and a couple of other, there's one referring where some files are, which I have actually answered, but there's a whole pile more to be done, I'm afraid. Okay, that's it from down under, I'm afraid. Having a lot of fun working on some work projects, which is good, but fortunately keeping me away from the OpenHSBR stuff. That's the news from down under. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business, Phil. And next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, all. Yeah, same old here. I noticed the dust on the radio today, so that's about the extent of my radio activities for the week, unfortunately. But, heading into year-end and hopefully a little bit off time, so hoping maybe to play some radio then. Back to you.
Fine business. Hopefully you're 433 megahertz radios are still working, and you're able to test the temperature inside your freezers and such, but at least that's something. Anyway, next on the list, we have Bob, VE3GKM, shown as recording and away, and that brings us to the end of the list, so we're open for general discussion.
Yeah, actually, all the 433 stuff is working, although it's funny, I've got a Christmas present from last year, which is a rain gauge, tipping bucket type rain gauge that sends its results via 433. I've yet to get out of the box I came across today and said, God, I really have to get working on this.
Well, that sounds like it'd be a simpler one than some of the projects you've talked about, so maybe it would work, but I don't know. I was also going to ask Phil, were those links that I sent you last week helpful?
Yeah, very interesting, and I had a chat during the week with Bill. He's doing some Go application work. I'm just starting a very significant project, which is going to be around for many years, and making decisions about what processor to use, what language, and what operating system, and all those sort of good things. So looking at alternatives to C, etc., is a good place to be working. But needs a little bit more work. I mainly this week been making on the hardware architecture, but next week I'll be starting on the applications development, the specification for that. So the timing was very good. But I had a quick look at it, and yeah, it looks. I mean, I don't understand. Well, I haven't programmed before, but certainly reading through it, I could see what was happening there.
Yeah, it's a little bit, but if you've got basic C concepts, it's not too hard to pick up.
Yeah, I'm not sure Bill would agree with that.
What? C to Go?
No, me to Go.
Oh, well, yeah, you're a special case. Although, actually, I think you'd be better off in Go than C Sharp.
Okay, well, I'm fortunately, number two son is a... He's an expert in C Sharp, and I'll drop him a bit of code and tend before he hit the return button, he comes with it all fixed and a big sigh saying, "Oh, Dad."
Yeah, well, I guess that's another route to go. No, the reason I'm thinking you, well, I guess you like C Sharp's IDE, which I think you won't find as good with Go. But I think in terms of C Sharp's object orientedness versus Go's, you'd be happier with Go's view of the world, which is less objecty.
Yeah, I'm not. There's no object orientation. It's a purely embedded, so there's no GUI or anything required. I've come to speed with Visual Studio C Sharp version 2019 this week, and the little assistant that sits on your shoulder and says try this, or fix this, or let me fix this for you, is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to get beat with Go, quite honestly. You're looking at C Sharp for hosting for something where you're going to have Linux running. It's going to be running on Linux, you think, or?
No, I'm not using C Sharp at all. What I'm doing is building a complete system simulator. If I wrote a complete description of the product, it would be, I don't know, probably 200, maybe 300 pages. But what I've been doing for similar projects is to build a simulator so that the person writing the code can go, what happens if I click this button, or what happens if this input changes, or that's linked to that, you know. So it's actually quicker for me to write a piece of code that actually simulates exactly what I want. You know, it's connected to the net. It's got all the features I want, it's got all the buttons and all the displays and everything. And then the programmer can look at my code and say, oh, okay, I see. Yeah, here's the logic here, rather than have to write out in pages and pages. The other thing it does is, by writing the simulator, I get to check that I've written I've actually got the spec correct, which is proving invaluable.
Okay, so you're essentially taking a C-sharp program and throwing it at somebody and saying, embed this.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you're looking at one of the strengths, which is Go is relatively good at testing all your pieces, both in your simulator and in your to make sure that the things that you're programming actually return the values you expect.
Okay, great. I guess, yeah. I mean, there's lots of talk, particularly as most of the data exchange is using JSON. There's some excellent packages on the web where you can just dump your JSON strings on the screen, and it'll do a verification of them, and then pack them into a compressed strings or uncompact them. And Notepad Plus has got some terrific JSON features in it. So using those tools and putting the data in and out of C Sharp to actually check that I've designed the thing properly, and I've got all my variables right, and the classes are correct, is the productivity is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I have used Notepad Plus as well when I work on Windows.
But if we're going to write in, if the final project is going to be written in C, which it probably is at the moment, then it may have been better for me to do the simulator in C++ rather than C Sharp. I don't know.
The only thing that I know about either C or C++ is you have to work yourself to do the verifications inside your code, where Go has a tool set to help you make it easier to do it. You still have to do it yourself, but the testing is just a little easier. I don't know if Bill agrees with me, but that's my opinion.
The testing is, I mean, you have to have the discipline to write the tests and all that, and sort of know the culture, whole theory behind it. You can certainly write Go code without writing the tests.
Oh, yes, you can, but I found them actually very helpful in finding mistakes that I put into the code.
Yeah, but I mean, you're a skilled programmer type, more or less, and Phil Wall's skilled is not necessarily a programmer type.
Wouldn't you say he's more of a hardware type?
I'd say skilled.
No, you're absolutely right. I like wetting the tip of the soldering iron rather than writing code. But I must admit, it's taken. I haven't used C Sharp since I was working on the KISS console, so it's certainly come a long way in terms of usability. And a lot of the tricks that the Kind team taught me when we wrote KISS, I remember those and bring them on again. So it's very productive. But the other thing is I can show my customer the simulator and say, look, this does this and this is here, this feature, and rather than just getting them to read a multi-page document, I can actually sit them down in front of the PC and say, look, these buttons represent this and these little boxes represent LEDs, and when you do this happens, and they can click and have a play and say, oh, that's nice, what about if it did this or what about if it did that? And generally while they're watching, I can actually change the code and get it done. So it's proving to be very, very, very efficient. And but the translation to C and running under embedded Linux is going to be interesting. But I think the team I've got to do that for me, it's going to work very well.
Yeah, I wonder, is the team doing this free to choose the implementation language themselves?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
I wonder if they may not end up with Go on the embedded side on this. Well, you said it's very JSON. I guess, I don't know, I haven't done C code or industrial scale C code in a while. I would assume that there are libraries on JSON parsing and stuff like that. But I mean, C predates an awful lot of that. So Go grew up with that. So it's got a lot of more of that internet protocol parsing built into it.
I just did a quick Google for Go JSON, and there's a ton of replies, Bill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does JSON pretty much natively.
It also has a large set of native functions for making any of the web server protocols. So it's, and you would expect that knowing that Google has had a big finger in Go.
Yeah, and also I just did the same with MQTT and the Eclipse payload library, which I'm using on everything here, including C-sharp is available. So, it looks good. All right, I might drop the guys a line and see what they think.
Well, as my friend Dave Witten likes to say, you can write code in any language. It's just knowing what your resources are and then doing it. Say, Phil, Scotty talked me into ordering one of the Max 10 Altera development boards. Have you done anything with that FPGA? It's a newer one. I'm curious how much of a steep of a climb that is to learn that.
Well, for me, it was trivial. And the first thing I did was embed an Arduino processor in it. So I've got a Max 10, which to the Arduino development system appears to be an Arduino.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'll have to figure that out. I have the development board, and I was getting geared up for it, but it was kind of like, oh, here it goes again. It wasn't hard once you understood all the issues, but I was curious about how different it is from, say, the Cyclone set.
I didn't find. I mean, the transition was pretty painless. It is slightly different, but there's some nice features. Like we had to write the bootloader for the Cyclone series, and on the Max 10, you can choose two options to boot from. So you've got your bootloader, and then the bootloader says, load option one or load option two, which is really nice. Trying to think, there was nothing that really I found a problem, but the win for me was I've always been interested in running a CPU in the FPGA. And to be able to just take a module and whop it in there, and don't have to learn a new programming environment, it appears to be an Arduino CPU. You can program it with you know, the standard Arduino tools and all the other existing libraries, I mean, my productivity that day was absolutely incredible. You know, I was flashing LEDs and connecting to all, over I2C and all those sort of features just using all the Arduino libraries. So, and the beauty is you've got the full source code of that Arduino processor. So if you want to say, okay, I want to add 10 more I.O. ports, which the standard Arduino doesn't have, or another serial port, or two parallel ports, or whatever, you can, you know, just modify the code to do it because it's open source.
Well, that's great. So, is there, is it getting the Ubuntu Linux on there? Is that one of the things that Altera provides, or is there another website that you have to go to get those things?
Ubuntu Linux. No, we're not. We're talking, I'm talking Arduino.
Oh, I'm sorry, Arduino. To get that on, did you get it from Altera, or did you have to go to a different site to install it?
Yeah, it's a different site, but I can send you the link, but the documentation for it is absolutely first class. So, no, it's a very short and quick learning curve, and in fact, after I'd done it, built it myself on my own board, the company who provides the code, you can actually buy a board from them, which is exactly the same physical shape as an Arduino, with all the same connecting pins, with one of the Max 10 devices on it, with their code already loaded, so that, you know, if you want to use it as a replacement for an Arduino, and then you want to start modifying your code, you don't have to go and buy you know, the hardware, or, you know, hack your own hardware. You can download over the USB new code into the Max 10. So, no, it's very, very nice. And if I just had a 50-hour day, I'd be pretty happy to play with it again.
Well, I know what you mean, but I've got that, and I want to play with it a little bit, but I've had other projects in the way and haven't. And I thought you'd be the person to ask about. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, my ex-whale's just passed me a paintbrush that requires cleaning, so I'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a link to the device. So it's a soft core Arduino. It runs on the Max 10, and it'll run at 96 megahertz. So it's a, you know, it's a pretty nice. Pretty nice little processor, and the quality of the documentation is outstanding. It makes me embarrasses me about what I wrote for OpenHSDR. But just, if I wouldn't mind, if you do, and I recommend getting one of the boards, because, you know, it's a very useful little board around the shack. It looks like you can use it as an Arduino board, and it's got audio on it and other bits and pieces. But if you do modify the code, I'd appreciate just having a quick look, so I can stand on your shoulders, if that's okay, Dave.
Sure. I'd be happy to share whatever I come up with. But I'm trying to get back into potentially learning a little bit more about FPGA programming.
Well, my strongest recommendation there is don't. Use one of these Max 10s and programming it in Arduino C.
Oh, well, that sounds good.
If you need another feature which is not on the built into the CPU, just tap on Scotty's shoulder and he can do it for you in a few minutes, and then you get back writing in the real world.
I really agree. I'm very reluctant about FPGAs, so. But, you know, you get around Scotty, and he's a pretty good salesman.
Just point him to me.
Sure.
No, it's very nice. I'm very impressed. It was a, I think it was a crowdfunded project initially, but and I sort of subscribed to the project because I thought, well, what I was interested in doing was putting a CPU into one of the large FPGAs we've got, and passing a lot of the, you know, the Ethernet housekeeping to that, rather than have to do it in Verilog. So, and, you know, just for general I.O. and other bits and pieces to be able to write it in C, but I had a look at how to learn the... There's embedded processors available for L2, and some of the low-end ones are free. But then you had to learn Eclipse and other bits and pieces, and whereas I can write hack C code without any problem for the Arduino, and there's lots of libraries available. And I thought, well, they have an Arduino equivalent processor inside an FPGA that you can play with. Should be a lot of fun. So, as I say, just need an extra week in the week, or a few more hours. But it's a lot of fun. But I think you'll enjoy it. It's a nice board. It's got audio input. So it's got A to D conversion, D to A on there. So it's got a potentiometer, so you can put analog signals into it as well. And running at 96 megs, it's a useful, just a useful device. And you drop that into one of Scotty's projects, and away you go.
That sounds good. I tried a few years ago. Jeremy or Annalisa was working on an SOC, and I got one of those and tried it, but I found it difficult to work with.
Yeah, John. I think John Melton did the same. I think he found a from Open Cores. I think he found a CPU, and he dropped it into one of the processors and got it working okay. But John's skills are way beyond mine. It certainly wasn't. I was really busy with Protocol 2, and to have an interrupt to go and learn how to run a processor wouldn't have worked. But certainly if I was starting from scratch now, I would definitely put a soft core CPU in an FPGA for an SDR.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. And the other thing I'm curious about is how well Dave Witten also tells me about the new NVIDIA boards. And there's a couple of developments that are coming out sometime this year, but they look like they make very good updates to the Jetson kind of configuration that we had several years ago.
Oh, very good.
So anyway, that's about where I am. I'm still, it's one of those inertia things. There's a lot of projects to work on and not as much time as you need. And I just got to get over that inertia.
Yeah, well, I think I started writing the T-shirt for that a few years ago, Dave.
I think so. But I'm always amazed how much horsepower you can put behind a project.
Well, I guess it's not a work for me, you know. It's fortunately work and hobby have merged into one now. So it's although they're long, you know, they're equivalent to long working hours. It's not like going to work for 25 or 20 hours a day. It's it's just doing things I love for that amount of time. So I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Well, that's good. Yep. Well, I'm in a point where I have a little more time now, and if once I get over the legacy stuff that I'm trying to clean up, it'll be nice.
Have you read the Pulse Ring guy's book, Embedded Systems?
Are you asking me?
No, Phil, actually.
I don't. Is it on a particular processor?
Well, no, it's on their website, Building Embedded Systems Programmable Hardware. Looks sort of interesting.
No, I haven't. Can you send me a link, please?
Sure.
Okay, it's on the to-do list.
Ever growing.
Well, the engineers I was working with this week, we had it to connect to an analog-digital converter. So I said, here's the spec for the ADC and I2C, the speed we need, how many bits we need, voltage range, etc., and what can you find a device? So I said, get a cost-effective one if you can. So came back and said, yep, okay, I've found a chip, Phil, here it is. So I said, how much is it? And he said, our one-off price is 60 cents, but they'll be lower in volume. I said, oh, that's okay, can I have a look at the data sheet? So he sent me the data sheet, and this is an ARM 75 meg CPU, which has got, UARTs, I2C, flash memory built in it, all the I/O I need. In fact, it's got, I wanted a 10-bit ADC. This has got 12-bit ADC. And it's 60 cents and it's 75 meg ARM chip. I mean, you know, incredible.
Price of transistors just keeps falling.
It's all those phones around the world making the parts that fit in them cheaper.
You know, over here it probably costs more like a dollar.
Actually, that was the US price, 60 cents.
Pre or post tariff?
Depends what day of the week it is, Bill.
Well, my understanding is the manufacturer on the other side pays the tariff, is what I'm told.
I'm sure everyone on eBay does that.
No, that's a fiction told by some around here, but I haven't done much electronic shopping since the tariffs went in, but oh well.
Okay, well, I got a ton of code waiting for me. Good to chat. I hope you enjoy the Pulse Rain Max 10 board, Dave. Please let me know how you go. It's a great learning environment, and you can come up to speed really quickly. So, enjoy. 7-3s, guys. Catch you all next week. Bye-bye.